Para-X Radio, your source for everything paranormal and beyond.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and its guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X Radio Network, its affiliates, its sponsors, or Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. Paranormal Encounters podcast series is educational, entertaining, and intriguing. Be careful what you wish for.
Careful what you wish for. Ever get that feeling that something might be hanging around?
Good day, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. The producer and host of this series is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. She will be joining you shortly. Before we meet Dr. Schutz, let me give you some background about her. She is a published author and academic, former legal investigator, and paranormal enthusiast, who holds 4 advanced degrees in the area of higher education and applied communications, with a secondary interest in parapsychology and life-after-death issues. Dr. Schutz travels to haunted locations all over the United States and Europe, seeking out situations to investigate. A sensitive intuitive, Dr. Schutz has had numerous experiences with the paranormal since the age of 9, with her most frightening and recent experience being an oval-shaped floor-length mirror cycling around in front of her in a haunted room she had stayed in. She has photographed apparitions in a screened window, been kicked up into the air, been sat on, choked, put into a trance, attacked, and continuously sought out by the unknown who want to share a message with her. From her personal experiences and in interviewing others, she has written nearly 100 illustrated stories in her book series entitled Paranormal Encounters. The Paranormal Encounters podcast series will initiate with Dr. Schutz first discussing a variety of interesting topics, as well as her personal experiences that will evolve into other segments for your interest, enjoyment, and education. Each podcast episode will be approximately 45 minutes long. Dr. Schutz welcomes your questions and comments. How to contact her or ways to order her books will be mentioned at the end of this podcast.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you again for listening to yet another special episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series as published by Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the writer, I am the producer, and the host of this show. Well, I am very excited to be interviewing my guest this evening. And I am actually hoping we can get a 2-part show out of him. Very fascinating young man. And his name is Jim Perry. And Jim Perry likes to embed himself with live paranormal experiencers and documents how supernatural phenomena has shaped their lives as it happens in real time. Jim has climbed Red Rock Mountains in Phoenix, Arizona, in search of a vortex or a portal, and he did so with a man actually ready to jump into one. He has interviewed haunted ancient statues. Now that's interesting. Most of us can have an experience with a haunted object where we feel and sense the energy from that object. But Jim has actually interviewed a statue or a haunted object, so that should be pretty interesting. And also, he has had lunch with, or is going to have lunch with, a vampire. So, I think Jim would tell you that there is not much that he would consider strange, and he is very interested in all these paranormal aspects. So, let's sit back and enjoy that conversation for this evening, and perhaps the next evening show we have as well. But I also wanted to mention something that he is rather involved in, and it's called UFOMET. And I'm going to spell that out for you. It's EUPHOMET. And it is a podcast detailing real stories from real people and their encounters with the unknown and supernatural events. So it's produced by, I think it's called Gomish Hat, the creators behind the fastest growing thriller and paranormal subscription brands called Hunt a Killer and Empty Faces. And each episode is about 30 minutes and delivers firsthand diary tales and hair-raising insights from experiencers about occurrences involving UFOs, cults, ghosts, exorcisms, numerology, and more. And so for more information or to listen to one of Jim's latest episodes produced by, I believe, a few of his co-makers, you should visit UFOMET.com. That's EUPHOMET.com. And now to our featured guest this evening, Mr. Jim Perry. Well, hi, Jim, and how are you this evening?
I am fantastic. I just finished lunch. I'm on the banks of the stormy Hudson River right now in upstate New York at a subject's house. And very excited to just dig in with you. I love your show.
Oh, thank you.
Excited to be here.
Thank you very much. Well, we're very happy to have you on the show, especially since you're going to bring together to us tonight very unique perspectives on a number of things. And so I'm so glad. And not only that, I was in my introduction of you, which most have heard already. I hope that we can move this to a two-part show because I think Jim has a lot to share with everybody, and I think it's going to be very, very fascinating. So before we get started, though, I wanted to ask you about any books or any events or anything you would like to promote. I know I mentioned a couple things in the introduction. Do you have anything that you'd like to share with our audience?
You know, as for right now, per books or events or other kind of branded products or UFOMET products, I don't have anything. The only thing that I'm working on right now is just this show, you know. And so if anyone wants to check out UFOMET and also subscribe, rate, and review, that's really the only thing I'm hoping people do is engage with the show. We've got a Facebook group, a secret Facebook group called Society of UFOMET that you can join as well, and that's where a lot of folks are sharing their experiences, especially if they have things that have happened to them in their lives that mirror things that happen on the show, which happens quite often, right? Everybody has a story. And so really, I'm just looking for people to check out the show and kind of give their feedback on it at this point.
Let's tell people how we get to this. So you have a website. I think that's probably the best place to start. And so why don't you go ahead and spell out, because euphemet is kind of a interesting word that most of has not heard before. So give us the link or the website so people can go and click into it.
Yeah, you can find everything you need at euphemet.com, and euphemet is spelled euphemet. So that's a little bit of a play on words, and it's a made-up name, partially because I was trying to do something a little bit creative back in 2014 when I launched this thing, and something a little different, but something that had a little bit of esoteric quality. And it had some sort of energy to it that was a little bit mysterious. That's kind of the explanation of the name, but it's euphemet, and you can find everything at euphemet.com.
All right, good. Well, it's very creative too, and I like it. So it has a catchy ring to it. So everyone just go to his website. And I think on your website, if I recall this, because I just checked into it recently, what kinds of things can we see on your website?
You know, right now our website is just very bare bones, kind of like how we don't have a book or anything else going right now. The webpage right now is essentially a landing page with social media links, how you can kind of like follow along on my adventures and my journeys as I go about it through Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, but also just an audio player. And it links to our audio player and actually how you could subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, which we recommend the most. So right now, yeah, very bare bones. But again, just because I want people to really engage with the show, and that will kind of start everything, I think.
And I need to explain to people, because I've listened to a few of Jim's shows, very, very well produced, very excellent, very mysterious too. I think you cover all kinds of topics. What kinds of topics do you interview people, but what kinds of topics do you interview on, Jim?
Yeah, you know, so when I was a kid, a big inspiration for me was watching reruns of In Search Of, the original series. And, you know, a series like that would really highlight a little bit of everything of the unknown, right? So that's ghosts, that's cryptids, that's mysticism, that's new thought, that's cults, that's whatever sort of lays deeply within the shadows of kind of like our known idea of what reality is, of what consciousness is are the things that we cover. The sort of predetermined factor that judges whether a guest or a paranormal topic is worthy of the show is really what the human experience is involved in it. So it really depends on the guest. And the paranormal, the supernatural, the unknown really is just merely the backdrop for whatever that human story is. So that really frees me up to dabble a lot and to be in a lot of different areas. And to me, that's really a part of the fun of it. But like I mentioned, ghosts, cryptids, haunted artifacts, things like vampires even are a thing that's happening. It's all over the board.
Well, I think that's going to make for maybe two interesting shows. I think we're going to probably push this to two shows and see if we can talk about your vampire experience. Let me see if I've got that slotted on this one. I want to double check. Hang on here. I want to look. And I think we have that slotted for show number two. So everybody listen to this one and listen to the next one, because I think Jim's going to have a lot to offer here. So Jim, let's start from kind of the very beginning. You know, many of us who especially are interested in the paranormal or have had paranormal experiences, usually at some point in our lives, we are either very intrigued by this or we have had an experience with it. And I think most of my listeners know that I've had my unconscious experience with it around the age of 9, but then it started to really explode for me around 2007. When I had 2 apparitions, spirits, family member, relatives show up in a screened window. And then all of a sudden I thought, you know, for many years before that, I had wanted to see a ghost. I'd wanted to experience a ghost. And it's really strange because on the property where I photographed these apparitions in the window, many know it to be my great aunt and my great great grandfather, but it was on that property that I actually did see, photograph them in the window. But for you, Jim, what I want to do is I want to switch this over and ask you, what on earth intrigued you, or did you have an experience at a young age or at any age, and how did you dabble into this? How did you get started with the paranormal?
You know what's interesting is I think as a kid, I really liked to be scared, first of all. I liked to scare myself. And growing up and being a young kid in the 80s and 90s, I was very in tune with whatever media was happening at that time, whether that were movies about aliens in the 80s or whether that was the introduction of listening to Art Bell way back in the day when he only had, you know, several affiliates. I think it was those cultural influences that sort of stimulated this curiosity and this creative part of me that I felt like maybe eventually I could have a place in that world. But I also grew up in a situation where the notions of or the acts of spirituality on my father's side with my grandfather, who was a Pentecostal preacher. So there was speaking in tongues going around in me. There was these very stringent beliefs about what all of that meant and what life in sort of like God's eyes was supposed to be. So there was this sort of like spiritual lore that had been I wouldn't say a big part of my upbringing because I never really attended much church as a kid. But it was certainly, it was that opening of like, well, these are people that I know, love, and trust. And they have some ideas and some practices that are based in some sort of fundamental belief of something else and something greater. On top of that, on my mother's side, there was a lot of psychic activity when I was a kid. And, you know, one of my great regrets, my grandmother died just recently. And one of my great regrets now is that I didn't catalog as many stories as I wish I would have about some of the synchronicities, very, very much coincidences beyond coincidence that would occur between my mother and my mom and other family members. It was very common in my household that my mom would walk over to the phone and pick it up, and then it would ring after she'd pick it up.
Oh, that's interesting.
And she knew almost every time when my grandma would call her.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw it on the other side as well. My grandma sauntering on over to the phone and picking it up. It's funny. I've answered this question before, and I've had to search for sort of anecdotal stories that sort of support this idea of growing up in kind of like a psychic leaning household in that way. But I have forgotten really about those stories until just now. And those incidents. So
I think that's really interesting on that part, because I think at least I would say 4 out of 5 of us here, that especially my listeners might know, when they're hearing you say about this synchronicity, they're also sitting there thinking to themselves, probably, yeah, I have that with my friend, or yeah, I had that with my boyfriend or my husband. Sometimes we can even fill in the spaces when we're talking with each other, and we don't even have to talk to each other because we know exactly what each other is thinking. And so where do you think this comes from? Because is it a psychic ability? Is it just the fact that people are, if it happens so frequently at, like, for example, your grandmother calls at 3 o'clock every day and she just knows it and she lifts up the phone, or what do you think accounts for that sort of connection? What's your thought on that?
Well, you know, it's interesting because the longer that I do the show, and especially the longer I'm on the road,
yeah,
kind of living into these experiences with others,
yeah,
that by most intents and purposes have had much more profounder personal experiences than I have,
mm-hmm.
but I'm able to like sort of bear witness to what and to kind of understand their notions of what this all means and what even an interaction sort of like psychically or, you know, clairvoyantly or whatever else, what the circumstances behind that are. But I can kind of tell you that my notions or beliefs about anything within the paranormal are constantly being sort of like challenged, and my notions always changed. And in fact, I'm kind of so deep in this process right now that, I mean, I think if somebody asked me like what my beliefs are, I don't think I'd have an answer right now.
Yeah.
You know, but I will tell you, the subjects that I'm staying with right now, and I guess that's, I'll step back. You know, Euphemet is essentially an audio documentary storytelling show. And so the guests that I have on my show are much more like subjects in the sense of the form of documentary,
mm-hmm.
Because I am right now, as we speak, in a subject studio, which is also doubled as my bedroom, mm-hmm. for the last 2 days, because I've just come here and stayed with these folks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, they're both students of non-dual Kabbalism.
Mm-hmm.
So in their sort of shamanic viewpoint, a situation that is occurring like this is perhaps like an expression of a dimensional understanding that we have, an emotional dimensional understanding that we have, mm-hmm. Between each other that we are able to tap into. Of course, there's others that believe in sort of resonance, mm-hmm. or a shared consciousness,
mm-hmm.
and those that you are sort of in tune with more often than not are those that your loved ones. So is it that, perhaps, you know, is there something more rudimentary, mm-hmm. that is predictive, you know? Are you able to sort of, based on prior experience, subconsciously, are you aware that, hey, mom is calling right now? Maybe. But here's the thing, is that, like, personally, this stuff gets weird in very small ways, too, for myself. I'll have moments where I'll wake up in the morning, but still be, like, in sort of a state of, you know, sort of somber consciousness. And in my head, I'll say it's 7:36 a.m. I'll look at the clock afterwards, and it's 7:36 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
So what is that?
Yeah. Well, that's what I call something that many people can also relate to, because lately I have been seeing very frequently the numbers 333. And yeah. I cannot recall offhand. I think 333 and 444, those are two sets of numbers that I think I hear other people talking about a lot, but I can't remember offhand what their connection was with something. And when you say you wake up at exactly such and such, I know right now that there's at least five people listening to this show that would say, yes, it's interesting because I always wake up at exactly 9:30 in the morning, or I wake up at exactly such and such a time or whatever. So how do we account for that within our body or our bodily system? Or is this something that we've trained our body to all of a sudden do and we just wake up? What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, or perhaps it's a sign. You know, is it the universe trying to express something to ourselves?
Mm.
Is it the universe trying to say, hey, here's a wink and a nudge?
Mm-hmm.
You know, my friend John Tenney, who had featured on a recent show on episode 10 of Euphemet, he is a paranormal investigator. He is Mr. sort of been there, done that. And he's a creative and expressive and charismatic individual in this field for sure. Mm-hmm. And he has some really great ideas about what this all could mean. And I think one of the things that he would say is maybe that's the universe saying, like, hey, do you want to play? Mm-hmm. You know, because more than often, I love that you bring up that, you know, your listeners and yourself included, you know, when folks talk about these level of coincidences or these pathways in the unknown, they are so relatable to so many people. And everyone essentially has a story, whether they can remember it right away or not, or it might take some coaxing. Everyone has a story of something like this. More often than not, when you start going down that rabbit hole, it's been in my experience that the universe really likes to play. And it'll keep giving you nudges. It'll keep giving you those little winks. Hey, do you want to play? Hey, do you want to play? And it's essentially a rabbit hole of sorts as to where you can go as far as you really want to. But, you know, what's interesting, and this is kind of parallel, it's kind of parallel to the three in terms of what that, you know, you're seeing sixes, or was it threes?
Threes. If I saw sixes, I'd be running out of my own room, Jim. So come on, you know.
Seeing threes is really interesting. So, you know, numerologists would believe that's sort of a creative expression, right? So sometimes it's those sort of interventions of using something like creativity to keep yourself almost grounded in a way so that you can kind of keep exploring but not get too lost in it.
Yeah, I know that with 666, and many of us know that symbol, and I am so superstitious on 666 that I will not buy or purchase anything that has that exact number in it in any respect. I will actually add something to an order or whatever if those numbers come up. So I don't know why some people would say, oh, that's hogwash. 666 is just a number. But I am so superstitious on that set of numbers that, I don't know. And, of course, you see it on these shows all the time, too. So they reinforce that in people's minds that there's something bad about 666. But when you also say about the universe wanting to play, the question I would have to you is this, is when do you know if the universe is trying to warn you of something?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Because the thing is that, you know, for me, I didn't ever find anything particularly yet dangerous about 333, and seems like 444 is a very... Those two sets of numbers flash before me in all respects, or I could look up at something, it'll be 444, you know, digitally, or I could look. In fact, just before before we taped this show, I did your introduction, and 333 is where my introduction ended. And so, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And so I don't know, but at what point, other than 666, of course, that people associate with demonic or danger or something like that, at what point do we know when the universe is actually trying to warn us of something? That I don't know. Have you gotten to any guess yet on that may have delved into that at all, and, symbols and all that? So,
one of the signs that I most recently... sort of did a feature on, and Euphemet, I believe it was maybe episode 8 or 9, was the Mothman. And the Mothman was just that. The Mothman was an expression, perhaps from the universe in some sort of sense, that was a harbinger. The Mothman started to appear in this town of Point Pleasant, West Virginia, leading up to one of the most catastrophic bridge collapses this country has ever seen, which took the lives of over 40 people, 46 people or something, and really changed that town and that region. They're still feeling the effects of it today, sort of emotionally. So I think there are interesting nudges and warning signs, but, you know, it also, a lot of this dives really deep into, like, sort of what the meaning of all of this is. And I would just be way underqualified to express any understanding. From the personal point, it's interesting you bring that up, because I had this conversation with my subjects last night in their living room, as I was explaining to them some of the more hair-raising experiences I had that have been challenging my perception of sort of what's real and what's not, and what I should be sort of cautious of, perhaps, and what I shouldn't. I don't feel like I've been in the presence of something that is overwhelmingly malevolent, but I know that there's a lot of time for that, and those sort of things can occur, right? You can get into danger zones, and we've heard about this, and we've seen it, and some of us have experienced that. For me right now, I have the privilege of not being scared of any of this just yet. I think that'll probably change when some of this gets even more real, because the show is in this fashion is just beginning, and my searching through this material is still relatively fresh with boots on the ground.
I can
so
add.
So it's something I consider. Yeah,
I can add to your Mothman experience and add to that. So I'm currently in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I had visited. I had lived in Indiana for many years, and of course my family's here. And so when I come to visit, I do all kinds of things. And one of the things, of course, that I also do is I do my family genealogy. And it just so happens that the night before the Minneapolis bridge collapsed, I was on that bridge. And it just so happens that the Mothman was seen flying from that bridge just before the bridge collapsed.
And, oh my gosh.
And so the reason why I bring this up is because every time I hear of the Mothman, I had looked up the Mothman on, you know how we're all supposed to believe everything on the internet. Well, not. But I was curious about it, and I was curious to go back in time. And I'm being in Indiana. I didn't live that far away from Chicago, and the Mothman has actually had several appearances. Now, my Chicago listeners, don't all go running and fleeing from your house all of a sudden. It's documented on the internet and through a wave of a timetable. But apparently this Mothman has been seen in Chicago many, many, many times, including a young woman who went to the park one morning with her dog just to take it for its usual stroll and discovered it standing there on the lawn, turned around, looked at her, put its wings out, and flew off away. And of course, it usually is very odd that usually only one person or maybe a couple will see this thing. But in my case, what creeps me out a little bit about the Mothman is that when I was on the bridge, and many people in Minneapolis can say I was on that bridge too, because it's a well-traveled bridge, but I was on it by myself. And not that that means anything, but I thought it was very creepy when I drove on it that night, because I had this really weird feeling of something as I drove over it, and I couldn't explain what I was feeling. And that was until the next day when I learned that it had collapsed. And then, of course, I can't remember if it was around 13 plus people who died, you know, when their cars plummeted and all that. But again, the Mothman was seen flying from that bridge, I think just before the bridge collapsed. So that's in. So in your journey, Jim, of when you're interviewing people and stuff, hopefully you will come across a pairing or a few people who have actually experienced firsthand a creature very similar to the Mothman, so you can get quite a dynamic story out of that one. So let me go back just a second here with you, and I want to ask you directly, did you say you did or did not ever have an experience yet or have with the paranormal?
I have now. I've had many experiences now that I can't explain of the anomalous. But leading up to, I would say leading up to about 8 years ago, they were very nominal and very based on sort of those type of coincidences. You know, that being said, I've always been sort of empathetic. Sort of my moral compass or my emotionality has always been very heightened. I think that's something I got from my family. But yeah, up until I started to kind of really started working on this show and producing this material and diving into it, less of an observer, but more of a participant, seemingly that intent, you know, perhaps woke something up as to where, you know, I nudged on the universe and the universe nudged back and said, okay, you're on the field now, let's do this. Since then, it's been a fun and weird ride. And since going and doing this show in this current format of audio documentary, the weird stuff doesn't stop. To the point where I'm needing to remind myself through the act of processing to write stuff down, to not just take audio, because I have so much tape. There's a lot of tape that doesn't make it to air either.
Jim, can you give us one of your experiences?
Yeah, I can. You know, just recently I saw the first apparition ever in my lifetime. which was very, you know, you go into this stuff and you think, okay, well, we hear about folks seeing apparitions and the illuminated smoky glow of a phantom.
Right.
And I finally saw just that. I was in West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
I was with an investigator named Greg Newkirk, mm-hmm. who has been on UFOMET for a few episodes. He took me down to West Virginia to check out the Flatwoods Monster Museum.
Mm-hmm.
So Flatwoods Monster, completely different story, but if anyone is interested in that, you know, sort of a crashed or a broken down UFO, you know, alien ship, perhaps, was found by a couple townspeople. They had a little bit of a scare, and it was never really seen again. But it's a very interesting and artful expression of what an alien or an extraterrestrial could look like. So, check that out if you're interested.
Mm-hmm.
But the real story was next door. The real story was next door with this man named Wesley. Now, Wesley grew up in this small town in West Virginia. We were in the haulers. We were in this little tiny main street, mostly dilapidated, mostly feeling the effects of the waning coal industry and poverty. And Wesley and his father own a historic hotel in town, which through time has been everything from a stop for coal workers to brothels, etc. Now sits empty. Very derelict and very creepy.
Yeah, it sounds kind of cool to me, but yeah, I love the creep factor, you know, aged.
Yeah, creepy in a very cool way. Like, I dug it very much. Greg was very into it, and Wesley shared a story for UFOMET that's an upcoming episode where he had an experience as a child of having perhaps a spirit guide of sorts. By all accounts, something similar to an imaginary friend, but with its impact on its relationship to his surroundings and what it taught him. And the story that unfolded was essentially pretty unbelievable and very compelling. So that's the story Wesley told us. But the backdrop to this was that Wesley was essentially a reluctant medium. And Wesley was taking us through this hotel. We were on the third floor. very limited lighting. So, you know, picture yourself walking through this hotel with peeling wallpaper, with just a shimmer of light coming from outside of a barely covered glass window, very Victorian style almost. And you're walking down these creaking hallways with a little bit of a cold breeze kind of blowing past your arm. And in those moments, Wesley would claim that he could feel something, and that he could see something, and that he could hear messages, voices, from individuals that were representing themselves to him. Greg and I, we couldn't see anything. We couldn't hear these things, but we're not mediums. What we could do is feel the chill. My body, seemingly, I've noticed a thing where it essentially sort of like activates on contact with some of this material, whether that's nerves, whether that's my nervous system, or it's something deep in the fascia, you know, between, you know, sort of bones and muscle activating itself. I certainly felt that. So it felt tangible. It felt like I was having a physiological reaction to whatever the space was and whatever these alleged entities were.
Jim, let me ask you a quick question on that first before. So when you're describing those feelings, have you ever walked through an energy field before of somebody or some things? An energy field as if you're walking through what it feels like is a really not shocking, but tingly feeling, but very electrical. And as you walk, it's like you walk right through, say, a doorway, just as an example. I've walked through a few apparitions before, and I would be absolutely like you could feel like you hit kind of a wall of electricity, hits your body, goes right through it. And I call it an energy wave, like energy field that you walk through. Is that similar to what you're describing? Or are you describing a situation where when you're walking down the hallway, you feel a very cold patch, very cold presence, and you walk through it and you just can tell because your hair on your arms and stuff, they're standing straight up? Which
it's your first example of that. It very much feels like an energy field. I have experiences being in like sort of these a few paranormal hotspots, and places where folks allege there's vortexes or energy fields that are very present and energized, and that is what it feels like. But essentially I can have that experience outside of direct contact with a being, I think. So just to give more sort of a clear example of that sensation, there could be a medium in the room with me and several other people that pinpoint where the activity or the alleged entity is within the room. And I could essentially be on the other side of the room and having that sensation without direct contact. But I'm so glad you brought up, you know, sort of that first expression of that sensation, because when I walked through a very particular part of that hallway, it did feel like I walked through a wave of energy.
Yes,
that completely saturated my body.
That's correct.
Now, I have to also put in the context that while I'm saying this, I know that perhaps not for your listeners, I'm sure, are very enlightened, initiated folks. But this is essentially language that I do tone down in my own show. And I do put myself not forefront within these experiences so I can highlight my subjects, but also in an effort to keep one foot in and one foot out. My friend in Newkirk's, these are things we remind each other all the time, one foot in, one foot out, so that we can try to be the best sort of humanistic vessel to experience these things and then be able to communicate them. So as I'm saying some of this stuff that seems so illustrative and detailed to what these experiences are, I don't think they're dissimilar to what other people experience, and so I know I'm not unique in that fashion, but I think it also my instinct to want to include a caveat that says that, well, I don't know what this is, but it feels like something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
I think is a really important part of that.
Yeah.
But it's in this hallway that he pinpointed a particular door. And this door, what was interesting, at the end of the hallway, was in between two stairwells, two converging stairwells. Yeah. One going up, one going down.
Yeah.
And it was situated in between. He says, for some reason, there seems to be, you know, sort of like a river ebb that, you know, a pool of water is collecting, and there's a little bit of that. And I said, well, man, like, I don't, you know, I'm not an expert in this, but I've heard from energy experts and those that study this thing that those diverging stairwells could be, you know, partially sort of responsible to that in terms of the energy waves that are interacting. And in fact, could be helping power whatever this energy is that is so palpable. So, you know, we to get to the apparition, we stepped away from that hallway. We stepped back into the light. You know, he had a very kind of dinky vintage lamp sitting on this table next to some empty beer cans, because you know what that space used for.
Yeah, I was just going to say, beer? Yeah, okay.
And, yeah, I'm talking to him, and Greg is beginning to understand that Wesley has some sort of ability, perhaps. And that he's demonstrating technique and a level of communication that he's seen with some of the best mediums and psychics in the world that he works with. So he's getting that feeling. And I'm looking Wesley, I'm holding my microphone up, you know, I'm doing the thing, doing the work. And behind Wesley's shoulder, or over his shoulder rather, back in that hallway, appears to me an illuminated phantom-like form or energy that would essentially be, you know, the top portion of, you know, if it was a man, you know, a 6'1" tall individual from shoulders up, you know, sort of gracefully glide through a portion of that and then sort of stop or maybe dematerialize or something similar by the door that was open.
Did you say you saw like a form or a shadow or a like an outline of this person, or did you actually see features of this person?
It was featureless, and it almost made it more alarming because it had the sort of the very classic ghostly visage. So we're talking like a smoke-like quality, a translucence, but also a little bit of a radiance, as if shining a flashlight onto fog is what this appeared like. But it had the loose silhouette or shape of a bust. Of a human, perhaps, or a human-like form, almost as if I just what was underneath, you know, past the shoulders were not revealed. So the proportions were stunningly accurate as to what you'd see in terms of a man-like entity. But the movement was that of something, of course, like otherworldly. Now, I'll be the first one to say, could that have been like a disparate headlight shining in from some other location? Could that be something atmospherically based upon a little bit of a cold air that we saw, and at that time the skylight, there was, you know, light shining through? Could these things be a possibility? Like, sure, why not? But all I can say is what I saw and what I experienced. I didn't see any of those other things the entire time I was there. I didn't notice any sort of disparate headlights. This was a very quiet main street, like I was saying, like sort of in disrepair. And so I don't believe that's what it was, but I'll hold all those possibilities as well.
Did you say that you saw it turn and move as if it was, I can't remember what you said here, moving into, like, if it was in a hallway, like turn and move and go through the wall of the hallway? Did you say you saw it turn and move?
It actually just kind of moved in a straight fashion, mm-hmm. with a little bit of a turn, mm-hmm. and it turned, if there was any sort of like, it essentially dematerialized at turn,
right?
So it like kind of turned into, you know, the dissipation of, mm-hmm. whatever that form was or whatever that light was,
uh-huh.
And it did it right at the point where the open door for the one of these, you know, treacherous rooms were, mm-hmm. that Wesley highlighted, mm-hmm. for us, and the same location where we had, you know, such a visceral experience with, just moments before, just walking through.
Did you have any equipment with you that, usually when I'm doing this, and I've captured manifestations before, thank God they didn't go to full body, but I have seen manifestations in front of me and then they actually expand and then they go through doors or through walls. I've actually seen that. I actually videotaped it, but the thing is before it, it was in a castle over in Europe, and we call it Room 23 because that's what it was, and it was a popular room for a nanny and a couple kids that actually burned up in a fire, and it was believed that the nanny and the kids were still hanging around the building. And anyway, they loved to come into that room, and they messed with the computer that evening, and they made me mad because here I am videotaping that whole experience, the manifestation. There was actually three of them, I wouldn't call it dancing, but swirling around in front of me, and then they just decided to come at me briefly, backed up, spread out, and then they went right through the door and left.
Wow.
But then they came back later to play with the computer, and I told them since they erased my video, they weren't welcome anymore and to get out. But I missed,
yeah.
That's what I did. I was pretty mad because I. But in the process of them being there, though, I did experience everything that people do experience as well. Which I was going to ask you: did you experience any type of feeling nauseous? Did you feel any type of feeling a little dizzy? Did you feel lightheaded in any way? You know, sometimes people would say, "Well, maybe there's mold in the wall, or maybe there's this going on, or maybe there's that going on, and that's what's causing this." No, it all lines up with itself when you have an actual experience. It doesn't just happen. It lines up with itself. Did you have any of those symptoms at all?
There was certainly a shortness of breath at periods of time.
Yep.
That sort of coincided with... what's interesting is alleged proximity, and I don't know if that was me really having a physical location based on sort of influence. When Wesley was having conversations with these alleged entities, and he would really commentate. He did a great job of detailing how close they were, mm-hmm. what they were doing physically, and any time that these alleged entities came close to us. Standing next to us, mm-hmm. essentially, there would be a shortness of breath,
yep.
that I experienced along with that. But for the most part, for right now, besides like sort of this kind of empathetic sensation I can get with people and locations, it really does materialize physiologically in that full body kind of
form.
Yeah. So
form. I think that that's one of the biggest mysteries many of us, obviously, we don't have, is the ability to always to see, you know, even more so, greater, at a greater... Now, little kids can see these things, probably, and so can animals, but as we age as adults, our eyes have a tendency to change, and so anyone who has the ability to see this type of stuff or this form, now I was able to see my experience with the manifestations in my video camera, which was infrared, and it was set up to be able to see this. Otherwise, I would never have been able to see that with my naked eye. No way. You know, and so I'm surprised. Now, you had the microphone, but I'm surprised they didn't put some kind of a some kind of an instrument or equipment in your hands to try to actually participate more in the experience of that. So
yeah. Well, here's the interesting thing is we went there really not knowing that that hotel possessed anything like that. And you know, our trip, we drove down there from Cincinnati, where Greg is located with his wife, Dana. They run the Paranormal Museum, or the Traveling Museum of the Paranormal and the Occult. We went down there with no instrumentation at all. Of course, Greg and Dana are like sort of fully equipped, but our intent for that trip was to really pick up the story, collect a little bit of action tape, but the ghost experience, the ghostly encounters, were very sporadic. It was one of those things where it was like, hey, do you want to come upstairs and see this, or do you want to come upstairs? And I was like, yes. I mean, we don't have anything to properly document this. The good thing is that location is not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And there are loose plans for us to go down there and look into it. Now for me, I also have to qualify. Like, I'm not really a ghost investigator. I'm not really like a ghost hunter. I'm a storyteller, and I'm collecting these I'm collecting anecdotal evidence along the way for sure. Have I been party to like very hard documentation and experiments and participate in some of these things? Absolutely. And I'm like really happy to be able to say that so fresh into this. But my goal and where my head at is always at when I go and do my interviews and spend time with my subjects is mostly anecdotal and mostly in regards to just capturing their story. So I should probably double dip a little bit. I should probably get accustomed to maybe even sort of situation. I can't speak.
Speak, Jim. Speak. For God's sakes, Jim.
With more equipment. So I'm ready for it, you know. But just a flashlight and a recorder.
That's all I have usually. I think one of the things too, which could have happened that evening anyway, and from my experience and what others report as well, is that sometimes when you capture things that are so compelling like that, especially depending on the type of energy this entity may have, you may end up with a blank video anyway. If you can get it and you can retain it and it doesn't mess with your video after you have it, I have a little bit of that from Las Vegas when I went on a haunted tour. I actually managed to capture a moving orb that was actually with me and following me, and I have that in my book from the pictures that were captured from that same moving orb as well. And I thank God it didn't erase my my video, but it was by accident that I even have that. So Jim, what we're going to do right now, because we are going to be moving into part two here. We are at the end of this first show, but what I want to do is just kind of do a baby recap of this show, and then Jim and I are going to go and we're going to do another show here in just a moment, which you'll listen to next week. But so kind of a recap of this evening. So let's recap again on where people can go. Give us your website again and how to get to that. Start with that.
Yeah, my website is euphomet.com, and it's spelled euphomet.
Okay, and if anyone has, now I guess people are going to be asking me this question, but I'll ask you. You need to set the boundaries and parameters on this. But if anyone feels they have a very interesting, compelling story they might want to share or tell, are you accepting people reaching out to you to tell their story, and if so, how would they get a hold of you?
Yeah, I'm so happy that you brought that up, because it was going to be a point that I wanted to make in this episode, and I completely just didn't even remember. So they can reach me, jim@euphomet.com. Just give me an email. That's a really easy way to do it, and I'll probably more likely see it in email than if you're to hit me up on social media.
Okay.
But conversely, social media is fine too, and I can share what those are if you want me to as well.
Okay, real good. Well, from us to you tonight, listeners, and again, I hope you found this segment very interesting, because the next one we're going to talk about here, we're going to go into auras and vampires and all kinds of haunted objects that Jim has actually received feedback from in interviewing a haunted object. I think that next show is going to be as interesting. So until from us to you and for the rest of the, probably the rest of the year here, I'm going to be out for a while, just a little heads up on that, but I am going to try to post shows as I can. Please keep listening to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. And again, thank you for listening tonight. And we appreciate you being on this episode, Jim. Say goodnight, Jim.
Good night.